Item 13, from the Director, Department of Parks, Recreation, and Culture, submitting an informational report regarding the current status and findings of the Estabrook Dam environmental analysis. This item is informational only unless otherwise directed by the committee.
Mr. Haley.
Kevin Haley with the Parks Department back. I guess first we'd like to thank you for your patience in this. We know we've been here several times talking to you on this subject, but it is there's a lot of information to gather, and we're trying to put it in bite-sized pieces so that you can fully understand it. To that end, you should have also received in your packet a draft executive summary, which I think does a pretty good job of summarizing the much larger environmental analysis. And for those of you that may be challenged for time, you can also sort of skip to the summary portion of the executive summary, and you'll see a lot of this. But we're going to click you through it right now and give you an opportunity to ask questions that you might come up with later upon further scrutiny. We're going there. Myself, Kevin Haley with the Parks Department. Don Perung is with me today. He's a licensed professional engineer with AECOM. They have been our consultant on this project for several years now, working on the dam repair documents and now the environmental assessment with us. Environmental assessment, you hear it a lot. What is it? Basically, it's an opportunity for us to look at all of the aspects and the different alternatives related to the dam. We needed to be compliant with the NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, and Wisconsin Environmental Policy Act, so a lot of what's included in here may seem straightforward and boilerplate, but it needs to be documented. We put together a technical team with representatives on it from the Department of Natural Resources, Southeastern Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission, the Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and, of course, our consultant AECOM and staff from the Parks Department and Department of Administrative Services. We've met several times. I'll share with you briefly. We will be having another meeting this morning to go through these updates and take solicit final comments on the draft environmental analysis so that we can move forward with that. The objectives of the environmental analysis is to address the alternatives to the dam, evaluate the alternatives based upon the NEPA and WEPA criteria, which we'll speak about, solicit public input on the scoping process and the alternatives. These are the environmental consequences or criteria that we need to look at to be compliant with NEPA and WEPA. Many aspects of the surrounding area, physical, biological, wildlife, fisheries, water resources, water depth, plant community, endangered resources, cultural, land use, socioeconomic, archaeological, historical, and other resources. They are all summarized in the executive summary, and they are explained in greater detail in the draft EA, which we are currently finalizing. But we do look at all those things, and you'll see comments about each of them. We started out with the technical team looking at as many alternatives as we could come up with, and then we actually were able to come up with a few more as the process moved forward. I'm going to click through them real quickly and then tell you that we have basically reduced it to three, which we are actively pursuing. Proposed action, which is currently in front of us, is to rehabilitate the dam. Alternate one is the same thing, rehabilitate the dam in the same way, but we would also add fish passage by constructing rock structures, most likely along the east bank of the river. We have funding from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that would help to accommodate it. So it makes repair of the dam one step better in that we're dealing with some environmental concerns. Alternative two would be to abandon and remove the dam. Alternatives three and 3A are abandon and remove the dam and then provide some rock ramps to facilitate fish passage. We're going to walk you through all this, so just patience here. Alternative four is modification of the dam, removing the gated spillway and installing a 6.3-foot high rock ramp. Alternative five, no action. And alternative six is to reconstruct a new dam in similar location. This will help orient you a little bit to some of the terms we use, forgive the jargon, but you see the line of dotted things. Those are concrete icebreakers. Their main goal is to keep ice and woody debris from accumulating against the gated spillway section and to deflect it downstream where it can go over the overflow spillway section. You see the gated section, it's a straight line. We've got a picture coming up. It connects to an island in the middle of the river, which is currently controlled by the Bureau of Land Management. The serpentine area is the fixed crest spillway, where normally when the gates are closed, the bulk of the river flows over that area. And then the upstream pool, or you may hear me refer to it as the impoundment. That's the lake, if you will, that's created when gates are closed, deeper, stiller water typically. Proposed actions. We're going to click through them one at a time here. Rehabilitate the dam. We've already developed plans and specifications to do this. There are structural improvements, repairs, upgrades to the gates to ensure that they function into the future. There is growing tree and vegetation removal where the components of the dam reach the land that could put it in peril. The county board has voted to implement this alternative in the proposed action in 2010. We need to address the NEPA and WEPA, as we've discussed. And alternative 1A, again, is the same thing. We would repair the dam, but we would also add this fish passage component. Picture of the gated section. You see two gates kind of towards the center are down. The other gates are up. When we're in this situation, the bulk of the river flows through these gated sections. As they're closed, it raises the pool and deflects it over the fixed crest spillway. Alternative two, abandon and remove the dam. This is one of the alternatives that the DNR sent us in their directive to either repair or abandon and remove it. What this would be is basically restoring the river to the free-flowing condition. Under normal flow, it would be similar to what it is now with the gates open. Under flood flows, the river levels would actually be reduced with the dam gates open in that scenario. Sediment would not accumulate. It eliminates the impoundment upstream, provides for kayak canoes but not motorized boats. It has the aesthetics of a free-flowing river, and there is no annual operation and maintenance costs because, in essence, the dam is gone. It's the least capital cost of all of the alternatives, and it does provide for uninhibited fish and wildlife passage. Don.
When we refer to this rock ramp approach, this is a technique or a process that has been developed with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And I chatted, they actually printed a book just on rock ramps and the techniques to use, the benefits of them, and things along those lines. And I gave a call to the author about a month ago and just chatted with him about some of the approaches with that. And the reason I did that is during the public scoping meeting, there was some interest in the rock ramp, but basically they were a little iffy on the whole idea. So I wanted to resolve some of the questions that the public had raised during the public information meeting so that we're better positioned to answer the public's comments and to make sure it's a good approach. The author that I discussed the approach with, he's been involved with about 75 of these types of projects throughout the country. There's a number of them in Minnesota, Manitoba, Ontario, North Dakota primarily, on the Red River and some of those places. But he's done them around the entire country. So it's a pretty neat approach. Basically what it amounts to is you have on the lower portion there you get a feel of, it's a series of pools and riffles, similar to what you have in nature, that allows the fish to go from step to step to step in order to get over the dam. Pretty simple approach. These rocks, the size of them, as you see in the top picture, they're from 3 foot to 6 foot type stones, huge field stones. One of the concerns raised was, well, when you have ice flows and things like that, some of these stones could move. And I discussed it with the author, and he indicated, well, he said, what we've seen from these other applications, it really doesn't happen. And the reason is, like a 5 foot stone, he says, it's about 5 tons. So it's massive. So they aren't readily moved. When I went and looked at the costs of operation of these systems, I included costs for debris removal, which should be less than the dam because you don't have as much upper structure, but I included costs for debris removal. I also included costs for going in with a bulldozer or a backhoe and moving some of these rocks around just in the event that that has to happen because I wanted to make sure the costs that we have for these things are realistic. Here's a picture of, this was a project in Minnesota that you get to see. It's a pretty natural type view So you hear a series of, you can see the larger stones, and then there's a smaller stones beyond that. And so it presents a very aesthetically pleasing approach.
And each step creates a higher level in the pool, as you can see.
Mm-hmm. And so this step-type rock arrangement is what we're looking at for alternative four. And the location of that would be we'd remove the 10 gated, that's about 200 feet long, remove those 10 gates, install this rock-type ramp, and it provides a more natural setting. It also provides an impoundment. The reason why we have a number of 6.3, it's kind of, why don't you just pick 6 or why don't you pick 7? The SWRPAC people actually did river modeling and determined that with this height of dam, we could provide the impoundment, and yet we still can handle 100-year flood, frequency flood. So that was a very big consideration. We looked at some other rock ramps in other locations, and one of them was lower, about a 4-foot-high ramp. That one was doable. And a 5-foot-high ramp at this other location actually would result in flood levels exceeding 100-year flood, so we eliminated that one from further consideration. Provides the impoundment. It's classified as a dam by the DNR, which has some criteria. There's criteria. They're not monumental criteria and things that can be accomplished. There's less operation and maintenance with this type of an alternative than alternative one, which would be rehabilitating the dam. It's less capital cost, but probably pretty close in the same range as if you rehab the dam. So to give you a kind of a general feel, and later in the presentation we'll show you some estimates that we've generated. It also provides fish passage.
And I would just stress something else that's not evident here. Not only does it provide an impoundment, but that impoundment would be year-round as opposed to the alternative in 1 and 1A, where we really only have an impoundment for about 3 months of the year when the gates are closed. This would be a year-round impoundment of almost the same elevation.
The one item on fish passage that I just wanted to share, you know, a person may say, well, why is fish passage important? Why do we have to do that? It seems like a pricey venture. The reality is, when you look at the history of dams, they have historically been impediments to fish. And what happens then is it's not just the fish that get impacted; it's the entire ecosystem, because there's mussels. These are like, you know, clams and things of that variety. Use the fish as a host. The eggs attach to the fish, and certain species of fish are used by the mussels. And mussels are one of the most impacted wildlife or aquatic life due to dams. So to provide fish passage, you allow the fish to travel back and forth throughout the river. There's better diversity of fish, greater populations of fish. It improves the quality of the other aquatic life in your whole ecosystem. So it's sort of a domino effect, and it's a very positive thing, and something that's been done nationwide to make dams or rock ramps, in this case, more environmentally friendly. So it's an important component. The other part of it is upstream in Ozaukee County, they've actually invested about $8 million in fish passages within the last few years. And by providing the fish passage at Esterbrook Dam makes their investment that much more meaningful and beneficial.
Because now fish can get beyond this dam to their structures further upstream.
Because there's a whole variety of different fish species that we're talking about. There's the Lake Michigan species, the salmon, the trout, things along those varieties that'll just keep on migrating. And then there's the other historically native fish, the northerns, the bass, bluegills, things like that.
And those native fish right now can't get past the dam generally. There's another aspect of fish passage, and the reason why is fishing is a very popular sport. It's a great form of recreation that a lot of people like, and it also provides economic input. There's a lot of people that come to our rivers just for this fishing opportunity.
You know, on that issue, I'm amazed. Under the Locust Street Bridge, which at one time, since the North Avenue Dam came down, we have fishermen driving from Illinois to fish under
Iowa,
the Locust Street Bridge.
Right.
And when I realized this, it just blew me away, because back in the day, believe me, you wondered at anything that could survive in that water.
Exactly, exactly. It's a big deal. And I'm an avid fisherman, and there's a website called Lake Link that has the vast majority of lakes in Wisconsin, and they give, you know, current, some it'll say 24 minutes. They just give a report at Esterbrook Dam. And it's a very popular site, and it's encouraging to see that kind of recreational activities, and it's being enhanced by things like fish passages and things along those lines. It's good stuff. So that whole list we had initially of about 6-7 alternatives, those have been screened to these three feasible options. The other rock ramp options, one of them was feasible, another one wasn't because of impacts to the flood levels. But this particular one provided the largest depth, the greatest impoundment, the furthest impoundment upstream. So that was why this alternative 4 was selected. And then there's the abandonment of the dam, and there's also the rehabilitation of the dam with the fish passage. Giving you a chat about the public scoping meeting?
On June 5th, at the Lincoln Blatz Pavilion, if you heard about earlier today, one of our nice historic buildings, we had a public scoping meeting. Basically, what we did is we walked those in attendance, which was probably in excess of 100, standing room only, through the research, what we had found, the technical team, the different alternatives we were looking at, explained where we were at, and the idea was to find out were there other alternatives that we should be looking at to get people's reaction to what we were proposing, sort of refine the direction moving forward. We got a lot of comments. We'll go through those in detail. We got a county website, SurveyMonkey, set up where people could go on at their leisure and leave comments, questions. We also received some letters from the public, and some of the stuff continues to trickle in.
You know, referring to the Blatz Pavilion as an historic structure, when I witnessed its construction, gives me pause to think.
Well, then I'm not going to state the year in which it was constructed.
That was AD.
Yeah.
18.
Okay. At the meeting, subsequent to the meeting, we actually got 125 comments on the website. Two letters were sent to us. In summary, 73% of those responses favored repair of the dam, 31 responded removing the dam. Five of them endorsed the rock wrap concept, which is still a little bit difficult to understand, and the rest just provided general comments on the dam, the area, and what they thought, expressed their real opinion.
What was interesting about this meeting, you know, from a personal standpoint, growing up in the area, it was like a receiving line because they knew a lot of the people, neighbors, things like that, so that was neat. The other thing that was neat from an engineering consultant standpoint is the passion. The passion was always there. Passion on all sides of the issue. Passion on repairing the dam. Passion on removing the dam. It was in passion for just more information so they can make good decisions, provide more input and things like that. It was very impressive. And as well as those 125 comments, I was wondering how those comments were going to be. Were they going to be insightful with good information that we can use into this report? And yeah, they were. They were very impressive comments. Some of them were from PhDs. Other ones were, the rest were concerned citizens that really felt important that they share their thoughts. And it was very impressive. If you have a moment, go through them. I mean, it's neat to see you sense the passion in every word these people have said.
But given the polarization, Don, it would seem that the five responses that favor the rock ramp, which appears to be the compromise from those who have
right.
environmental concerns, it maintains the impoundment. What accounts for the lack of response there? Any idea?
Yeah. I thought long and hard about that. You know, and we've invested a good amount of time developing this compromise with the rock ramp. These people, I shouldn't say like these people, the people are passionate on what they believe in. And because of that, they were strong-willed. and really wanted to make sure that their thoughts were voiced and were voiced in exactly what they wanted. And exactly what they wanted were either the dam repaired or the dam removed. And this whole idea of compromise, well, maybe there's a plan B later on that they would be amenable to. But at this initial scoping meeting, they had their heels dug in hard, and they weren't very receptive.
Sounds like Congress.
Well, it was. It was like Congress. The other part of it was, during the scoping meeting, the comments that were made about the rock ramp, there was a number of them that were negative or questioned things or wondered the whole viability of it. And at that time, I didn't have a number to throw out of 75 that had been implemented throughout the country. But instead, we listened, we took their input, and we're bolstering the discussion in the report that discusses a particular rock ramp. So at that meeting, they weren't keen on the whole idea. Will they be keen a month from now or 2 months from now? Time will tell. I think they may be more receptive to it, but they were more concerned to share where their views were, and their views at that time were not on a compromise.
Well, we do have four people who want to be heard from who have been patient enough to wait this whole thing out to item 13.
Yeah, we can chat.
And would like to be heard from. Is there more you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, there is.
Good. Go ahead.
We'll move through it quickly.
Yeah.
The next several slides are just public comments. They're abbreviated from the comments as written. They haven't been vetted or verified. These are just the comments that we heard from the people. There's no attempt to be objective or subjective about them. I will state that we have taken all these into consideration in our, in essence, weaving them into the environmental analysis, making sure that the questions are answered, that we're looking at the whole picture. So you can sort of see for yourself, it makes sense. There's only one public boat launch upstream on the river. It's not on county property. It would make sense if we were to have an impoundment to potentially create more, is I think what we were hearing. The dam provides flood protection. The other alternatives do not. I think we've discovered that may not be correct.
Right. And the reason people say that is when there's a pending flood, the gates are all open, it's able to accommodate the water, and they say, well, then we have flood protection. And the other alternatives do not. The rest of the story is, if the gates are closed, the dam actually results in a worsened condition during a flood. So that's why when we looked at these costings, we have included labor in there to adjust water levels or gate operations so that the result is that the gate does not result in a impediment. So there's a perception of flood protection, but the reality is all these other alternatives, they can pass a 100-year flood, and the dam can pass a 100-year flood if the gates are open. So it becomes an equal situation, not really a betterment.
Dam provides boating, canoeing, and kayaking. True, the impoundment, recreational, and aesthetic. The existing river levels are lower. They allow for canoeing and kayaking, but not the operation of motorized boats. The impoundment directly benefits 350 property owners. County taxpayers end up paying all the long-term costs. Remove the dam. Environmentally, the dam removal is the best long-term solution. You're seeing a broad breadth of comments here. Provide fish passage to benefit fish, mussels, ecosystem. Provide cost information on all feasible alternatives, including construction and long-term operation and maintenance. We'll go through that in just a minute. Address the indirect effects on other projects, such as the $8 million that's been invested upstream Don spoke of. This would help augment their activities. Address flooding, collection of debris, and the county's ability to respond to flood events. We'll also talk about that shortly. Project costs?
Project costs. What we've summarized here are the estimated capital costs for initial construction related initial type costs, as well as the annual estimated operation and maintenance costs for the three feasible alternatives. So for rehabilitating the dam and including fish passage, about $2.5 million for capital costs. And then the annual estimated operation and maintenance costs are $160,000. If we remove the dam, the cost for removal is about roughly $1.67 million. but there's no annual operation and maintenance costs associated with that alternative. Then the rock ramp at the dam with fish passage would be about $2.4 million, which is a similar cost to rehabilitating the dam. Not a whole lot of savings there. They're in the same realm of costs. The estimated operation and maintenance costs would be less, about $55,000, because there's no gates to operate or maintain, and there's no labor associated with operation of the gates. So that's lower. There is also funding that we want to share some information with, and this is a very positive situation. The county has $1.6 million bonding capacity through annual budget process. The Wisconsin DNR Municipal Grant Program has $400,000 available for repair of a dam. There's also the Wisconsin Stewardship Fund, which has up to $1 million available for several different scenarios, including the dam repair, dam removal, or for fish passage. And then the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has authorized a grant to Milwaukee County for $220,000 towards fish passage. So those are very encouraging funding sources. And then, again, the annual operation and maintenance costs would be the county responsibility. And earlier today, in your other presentations, there was a discussion about present worth or present value. And that's basically the amount of money that you'd have to invest today to cover you for the next 20 years of the life of the dam or a rock ramp. And it's a common approach to figure out which one of these alternatives is really the most cost-effective. And so you compare apples to apples. So you take the capital cost, that's the cost we chatted about before. We take the present worth or present value of the operating costs over a 20-year period, and that's based on a 2% interest rate, and convert that to how much money would you need today to cover the operating costs for any one of those projects for the next 20 years, and that's shown there in the middle column, and then the total present worth is adding those two columns. So what it shows is alternative 1A, rehabilitating the dam with fish passage, would be about $5 million. Removal of the dam, it doesn't have any operating costs, so that's the 1.67 again, million. And then the rock ramp at the dam with fish passage would be about $3.3 million with a total present worth. So what it shows basically is alternative 2, removal of the dam, is the lowest capital cost, it has no operating costs, and has the lowest total present worth. Then in comparison, the next most cost-effective would be the rock ramp, which is, in a total present worth basis, roughly double what removal of the dam would be. And then the third option, rehabilitating the dam, would be about triple what removal of the dam is. Now, costs are just one component. When we looked at the overall environmental assessment, there is 18 to 20 different components. It isn't strictly cost, because cost just shows one element of your overall project, and there's all these other environmental or recreational, cultural, historic. The dam is registered in a National Register of Historic Places. So there's a variety of different elements that all factor in, but this was one of them. We hadn't had a chance to share that with you, and these numbers are still under development, but we wanted to give you an idea how these various things all rank.
And if I might anticipate one potential question here on alternative 1A, you're seeing $160,000 annual O&M. That's significantly higher than we had originally envisioned, because we thought we were dealing with debris removal and upkeep, those types of standard things. As part of the hydraulic studies that was done, we became aware that any time that the gates are closed and a large storm comes through, those gates being closed will cause flooding upstream beyond the 100-year flood unless we are able to open all of those gates. It's further exacerbated by the fact that we can only lower the water level in 6-inch increments for ecological reasons. So there's a significant cost in there, and that's to represent a program we would need to initiate. And it's spelled out in the executive summary in greater detail. I'd encourage you to look at the liability section. But we would have to initiate a plan to monitor weather, storm forecast in anticipation of large storms, and then have a protocol and staff available to begin opening gates and get them open in time for those increased flood elevations, and we haven't even begun to think about what would happen if we had power outages or other reasons that precluded us from getting all the gates open in a timely manner. Mother Nature might just come too quick. So that's why you're seeing that significant increase in annual operating and maintenance. It's not about the cleaning of debris. It's about operating the dam. And that's all we have unless we have questions.
Mm-hmm. Questions by committee? Again, a very thorough report. Apparently, I'm not hearing from my colleagues that they have questions.
Well, the suggestor is the director has suggested maybe a quick update on timing. As I indicated, yeah, we will be meeting with the technical team again tomorrow. They've had a draft copy of the full EA. They'll be providing their comments to us so that we can edit it one more time and hopefully get to that final document. That's the process we're at. We'll take your comments and concerns, that which we continue to get, finalize the draft EA. We anticipate being back here probably in September with the final EA and any recommendations that we might have, but ultimately it will be the county board's decision as to how we move forward with this, which of the alternatives, if any, we pursue.
And there will be another public information meeting on the project, too.
Oh, and where will that take place? Has that been determined as yet?
We've been pretty successful at the Lincoln Blatz Pavilion, although we have...
That historic building.
We need to look at some capacity issues.
There,
we filled it up last
time. Right, it was maxed to the hilt, so we may need larger.
We'll do that in August, so...
Right.
We'll have the public meeting in August.
Very good. Well, now that it would be the time to hear from the folks who have waited patiently. Glenn? Gable? Glenn, it's been so long since I've seen you. Gable or?
Gable, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought, the German pronunciation.
Yeah. I'm going to start by handing these out so that you have them for the future. Kevin, would you mind putting the rock ramp picture back up there for us?
We'll get your try.
Okay.
Wake it up.
My name's Glenn Gable. I'm a resident of 700 West Rock Place in Glendale, Wisconsin. I'm also a volunteer with Milwaukee River Preservation and a director. What we want to do is clarify some things. The presentation and the scoping was very, very confusing. Scoping didn't even ask. It just said, "What are your comments?" There was some. Even the dates, they said Saturday, and then they gave the wrong number date. There was a number of different things that were confusing. Also, the reports that we were given in advance of the meeting, and we got that through channels, through Supervisor Lipscomb and through Sewer Pack. The water elevations and levels were very, very confusing. They were talking about maximum water elevations. Well, those people who use this lake, and it's the only lake in Milwaukee County where you can put your own boat in and take it out. The only inland lake, and not everybody wants to be out on Lake Michigan. So this is a very important resource for the county to have a lake like this. Okay. They didn't give clear elevations. They said the maximum elevation for a rock ramp. Well, we want to know what's normal. The flow levels that were given were not typical of July and August and September. Those flow levels were a lot lower. We'd have a lot less water with the rock ramp. So what's being portrayed is a little confusing to people. Some of you are newer supervisors. We've been fighting for the dam to be repaired since 2008. Okay. In 2009, the Milwaukee Board of Supervisors resolved to repair Restbrook Dam, and it was in the 2010 county budget. At that time, Executive Walker vetoed it, and we've been through all this before, but... partially because of Supervisor Lipscomb and all the information we put out there, there was an overwhelming override of the veto, 15-2. Additional funding for repair and remediation of the Esberg Dam was approved in a more recent county budget. And later in 2011, then Governor Walker had he saw our way, as well as some of the senators, and he actually increased the amount of state matching funding available for the repair of Esberg Dam with a line item amendment to the state budget. So there's of the three alternatives. Well, first of all, in March, Supervisor Lipscomb then met with Director Dargle and with County Executive Abley, and he told us, hey, they've got clear orders, repair the dam and move it expediently. Well, they did scoping, even though they have to do scoping again, delayed the project a bit. Our numbers, we did a very, very careful tally of those same responses, by the way. Some people said right on there, we want alternative 1A, or we want alternative this or alternative that. Other ones were more general. So the way we read what these, and we looked over these responses very, very carefully. We didn't get 125. We got 102 responses, of which two were letters. 77 requested the dam be repaired. Only 18 wanted the dam removed. 11 did not state a preference. Sorry, getting a little excited here. Two wanted and an alternative no longer included, and only one wanted the rock ramp that they're including. Only one of all the responses. And there's a good reason for this. Up until 1937, major floods were caused by a rock ramp, a rock ridge. 2,000 men from Department of Interior were brought in to tear it out, straighten out the river, and stop the problem with this unmovable dam, you know, a rock dam, and the flooding stopped, and the problems stopped happening. We're really suspicious of this rock ramp. First of all, we did the map. We've been in contact with Sewer Pack, and they've had some issues with, they changed what elevations mean as far as datum, and they used old datum. We've been calling them and emailing them, and they're not responding, but it's a significant amount of depth. This is a very flood-prone area, and it's not just the people living on the river. It's pretty flat land, and if it floods to the house on the river, it's going to flood 4 blocks in, 10 blocks in, so forth. Okay. Also, what Kevin said about controlling the dam, well, yeah, it could maybe be, if you looked for the most possibly expensive way of maintaining that dam, maybe it would be 160 grand a year. They've never spent that much. If you wanted to do it like where some guy goes and actually raises and lowers the gates and so forth and does the Fred Flintstone method from the Stone Age, yeah, you could do that. But you guys funded an automated gate system that's motorized, and it could be controlled with SCADA, and this is a very typical thing. They've never spent that much. That 160 grand a year is totally out. That's just in order to prove a point. It's not going to cost that much. It never has, unless they want to continue to prove a point. Now let's get back to the Sewer Pack and the models they used. They used the book that was being referred to by Don was called Natural Channel Design in Dam Removal and Fish Passage. Okay, in the text of that book, it says conversion of dam to rapids is best suited to low head dams that become inundated during bank full flows. Esberg Dam is a high head dam. It's not a low head dam. The picture that they're showing there, first of all, the lower portion is inaccurate. It doesn't have a sheer side like that. It's got a fish ladder built into it with steps. Okay, secondly, if we go look at the top picture where it talks about the stone size, well, yeah, it does have a few 3 foot and 6 foot stones, but what are those going to stop water? No, it's got smaller ones to fill it in, 1 inch and 6 inch cobble, field stones, waste concrete, all that kind of stuff. That moves. And we've got record of over 5 of these that have failed, and many more have partially failed. When they fail, basically ice, okay, the whole reason that Assiniboine Dam has to get repaired to the extent that it is the DNR felt that it wasn't strong enough, even though it's anchored to the bedrock. So if we go and look at a comparison, hey, that thing isn't strong enough and it's that big and it's anchored to the bedrock, well, these stones move. The ice moves. When ice forms, it's going to move that smaller rock. It's going to move some of the bigger rock, too. Okay.
Could you kind of summarize and then state your position on this in terms of what you want
to do? My position is to please send the parks back and have the datum corrected. Please send the parks back. There's so much to cover. That's if I take a picture, these two pictures, and I would put them on the screen, but it probably take more time. We look at them. This is 2005. See these polygons? That's all open water. It's deep water. You can run a boat through there. You can run a deep boat through there. We got the same polygons in a 2010. These were 15-foot tall trees then. But you notice they're all full. They're all grown. These are trees growing in. Sewer Pack didn't even include this stuff in their study until we screamed and hollered, and they said, okay, you got 5 days. Well, it was the dead of winter. It was like below zero. We went out and tried to map some of this stuff. Now we found as much as 15 more acres. These trees are all going to jam up in that wherever they are. If we take a look at this East Oxbow, this used to be river. It's full. There's no way you could get through there. This is how much wood is in there. Some of these trees have trunks this big because they let this project go this long. And the concept of water being slowed by obstacles in their engineering talk is called roughness. It's a roughness coefficient, Manning's roughness coefficient. They've very, very slightly adjusted that after we made a big stink about it, and it's not nearly enough. They haven't included whole sections of the river. The 6'3" rock ramp was the tallest thing that they could make to try to make a pond. It still wasn't enough to run a boat through. And it was the tallest thing that they could have that wouldn't cause flooding. I'm saying it's going to cause flooding. And Sewer Pack has not addressed it. And we've been emailing them, and they said, well, yeah, we'll do it, but the county's got to ask us to do this. Right now, we got a thing that we have to do. We got to do it this way. Okay, so the numbers are wrong on the rock ramp. The maintenance numbers are wrong on the rock ramp. In former times, this distance across at the widest point was 297 feet. The widest point that we can find right now is 70 feet wide. It's only 8 inches deep in a lot of places, maybe 2 feet deep in others. That's all of this sediment has washed down, filled it in, made new islands, and it's a true flooding issue. And we want to have a true flooding solution, which is gates that can be lowered and raised. There's not that much difference in the cost of building it. And as far as maintaining it, Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors had the foresight to dedicate and earmark the money from the tower revenue of Essebrook Park for the sole purpose of this. It's not coming out of your general fund. It's already funded for the maintenance of that dam. Through scoping, we know the people that use it, the people that fish it, the people that live along it, really want that dam to be repaired. We want our water back. We're paying taxes like we live on a waterfront, and we're not getting any of that, and we're selling our properties for a lot lower. The people want to use that water. It's a unique resource. Why get rid of it? And these engineering numbers are so closely manipulated, and that maintenance cost, I think if you look, if I remember right, and I'd have to remember, but I think the highest that they spent for maintenance was like $30,000. Now, I think also it's a big fib that it's going to be cheaper to maintain that rock ramp. When all that wood comes down, right now they do go in with a tracked vehicle, a shovel, and they pull it out every spring, all the trees and stuff. There were many years where they could not remove it because the water was too deep. When they put a 6-foot, 3-inch rock dam that cannot be lowered in there, they will not be able to go in there and remove that debris with a track vehicle. They're going to have to come up with something else.
I think I've given you as much latitude as is reasonable at this point.
Don't you want to hear the information? Don't you want to know the truth?
No, I want to hear the next person and afford them the opportunity also to be heard.
Okay.
You know, we're not going to litigate this thing today at this committee. That's not our purpose. And the complaints you have about Sewer PAC and about other agencies of government perhaps are best addressed to them.
They were all being directed through the parks. I think those numbers should be corrected before it's presented to the public, so that the public has a clear picture, not like what we had before. We want to understand what's coming. We don't want to have surprises that were... Kevin Haley has wanted rock ramps since the very beginning, and the former parks director has... You wouldn't be looking at these expenses if they had spent $6,000 to fix some wooden stop logs.
Are you trying to win allies here? Because
you may be alienating
critical decision makers.
No, I'm talking about the former parks director. There's been a movement afoot to get rid of this dam, and we need to have this thing handled correctly, just like the board voted for, just like was promised to the county by the county executive. And I think this has all been on the volition of people that were in bureaucratic positions rather than through our elected officials. And that's...
Thanks for your testimony. Vicki Ross?
I was going to say good morning. Good afternoon.
It is.
Chairman and supervisors, I'm Vicki Ross. I live in Glendale on the river. I am part of the group of neighbors that have been active and passionate about this issue for over 5 years. I'll try to be brief, so I organized my comments, and forgive me for reading from them, but you have them in front of you for reference. We got a copy of the executive summary of the environmental assessment last week. As an executive summary, it's very difficult to know what the details are behind the conclusions and the summaries that are presented there. So while I have lots of issues and lots of passion about some of what I saw earlier today, I'm going to try to stick to my prepared comments. I tried to focus on areas that the executive summary talks about where we feel like they may not be going far enough or they may not have enough information, that I hope the detailed EA answers those questions. But that remains to be seen until we have that document in front of us. So I tried to limit, I could comment on 50 issues. I tried to focus on the top four. Public input comments gathering. Please consider gathering details on where respondents live in this process. That was not a part of the SurveyMonkey tool as it was designed. While it may be interesting to gather input from all corners of interest, it would be helpful to know which comments are from Milwaukee County residents, Wisconsin residents, or neither, when you are put in the position of weighing the impact of their feedback and how much that should affect the decisions you will make. Please recall, or if you weren't there at the time, be aware that a busload of fishing enthusiasts from Illinois attended the first public meeting on the Esterbrook Dam issue, and they were quite vocal. This meeting was held at the Transit Center. Numbers alone do not provide enough information. Secondly, the water quality data. There's an often stated belief that dam removal would increase water quality. This is hinted at in the EA executive summary and was also reflected in some of the scoping meeting feedback comments, which a number of us have read. Attached is a separate page with some detailed results of volunteer-gathered data collected since May of 2007, which is partially a Riverkeeper project, I might add. And this captured details during both the impoundment and the protracted drawdown periods. The protracted drawdown conditions are similar to what would be likely to occur in a dam removal scenario. This data clearly reflects that removing the dam will not improve water quality. If water quality is a key consideration in arriving at a final decision, and I don't know if it will be or not, but if it is a key issue, I would urge you to make sure that all available data sources are fully explored to make sure that the science is correct. There's another page attached to my materials put together by Pete Horgan, who is one of the volunteer water testers and has summarized and boiled that data down into a one-page summary for you. Third, which is one of the points Glenn was making, sewer pack flood risk calculations. Please be aware that these calculations may be significantly underestimating the future flood risks associated with any of the three alternatives being considered, any of them. The unintended consequences of the extended drawdown have resulted in A, considerable vegetative overgrowth, and B, new deposits of sediment, formations of actual new islands have occurred from Glenn's pictures, that have materially altered how water flows or collects throughout this historical impoundment area. SewerPAC, by their own admission, has not conducted a thorough investigation of this area and therefore has not modified their calculations based on specific current conditions. SewerPAC made only a slight adjustment to standard formulas to address concerns we had about the impact of increased vegetation. The SewerPAC data contained in the EA draft should be challenged and reworked to more accurately and specifically consider current conditions. Detailed observations are also provided via Dave Dorner, another one of our neighbors and members, and is attached in your package there. And fourth, dam removal cost estimates and risks. This has been an issue since the first report that came out on this project over 5 years ago. Please require that all costs and risks, exclamation point, as well as all approved and available funding sources are reflected in the cost comparison sections of the environmental assessment. Glenn just mentioned that you all have approved that tower revenue be directed to cover the cost of ongoing maintenance for the dam. That was not represented in the cost summary that we just saw. Makes you wonder why they missed such an obvious point. It's difficult to discern in the work done so far in this area is it complete or not from the executive summary? Maybe there's more detail when we see the full report. A number of components that should be reflected in the full EA, and if they're not, should be added. How much money is approved and in place from funding sources that support only repair? It looks like we got a bit of the information on that today. Similarly, what are the approved in-place funding sources that would support the removal or the rock ramp scenario, the rock ramp dam scenario? Third, approved and in-place funding sources that provide ongoing funding for dam maintenance, which I just mentioned, the tower revenue. And here's the big one. Do not believe this low number for dam removal that keeps being put in front of you. And this has been a tactic for 5 years. That number needs to be a fully loaded cost estimate for the removal alternative that includes expenses associated with a number of things that I don't believe they're counting today. Remediating municipal outflows and residential seawalls, boathouses, docks, and other permanent structures that were erected to be consistent with the depth of the historical impoundment. Okay, you remove the dam, that water depth changes, all of those things have to be remediated. At whose expense? If you don't include that, the cost of the impact that's directly caused from removing the dam, you can make it look very inexpensive. If that is not a component of the cost of that scenario, if that's not something that's going to be considered in a dam removal project, then there should be a cost attached to the risks of legal action against the county from various entities in the event that these fixtures are not remediated and funded as part of that project. to continually be silent on this point each time dam removal is discussed, and to continue to present it as the low-cost alternative falls far short of representing the associated adverse impacts. Figures associated with removal represented in the past have not told the whole story and, frankly, have been misleading and a disservice to Milwaukee County decision makers. And we have mentioned these topics again and again and again. None of this is new ideas from us. And it would be nice if we could see, you know, the other players in the process engage us on these points and, you know, flesh out, you know, a fuller picture than what we continue to see coming out of all this work from the technical team and the EA process. So please keep those things in mind, and we're anxious to see the EA when it comes out, and hopefully they've addressed some of these issues.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Carefully thought through and well presented. Thank you so much. Jeff Gooley.
Good afternoon. I would like to thank Board of Supervisors for this opportunity to speak. In the past few years, there have been many beach closings on Milwaukee County beaches due to high levels of bacteria, many more beach closings than in the past. I think a scientific study should be done to look at the correlation between low water level in the Milwaukee River since the dam has been out of operation and the beach closings. On hot summer days, green algae grows on rocks in shallow water. And when it rains, it takes that algae off the rocks and heads down to the harbor and into Lake Michigan. These clumps break off in heavy rains and head round. I have lived along the river for 28 years and can tell you that this did not occur when the dam was in operation and the water was 4 feet higher in front of my house and along the whole stretch of the impoundment. Please repair the dam and improve Milwaukee County beaches on Lake Michigan. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Peter Horgan.
Hi, Supervisor.
Hi, welcome.
How are you today?
Good, thank you.
Good. Thanks. I'll try and make this really fast. I'm just going to read it to you, and we're all going to go to lunch.
Okay.
I'm Peter Horgan. I'm a longtime resident of the east side and of the Milwaukee Riviera in Glendale. I've lived in two sites there. I also started out as a river patrolman for the warden. I'm a snitch. If you do something wrong, I'm going to have them come to you. And I also work for the Milwaukee Riverkeeper. I'm a water quality monitor, and you'll see my statistics attached to Vicki's presentation. I am also a member of the Milwaukee River Preservation Society for a long time, maybe from the beginning, and I'm also one of their directors. My issue with this whole thing is planning that was needed to be take a larger view of our planning. I understand very well that this EA has taken a long time to get to this point. My first time remembering the actual question coming up from Bill Warzen at Fisheries about the removal of the Esterbrook Dam was 1986. So that being the time, I'm going to move on rather quickly, and I'm going to select an option at the end. So I know that we all have limitations in the large urban planning, which the Esterbrook Dam is part of. And when we look at parks options, we find that the planning has been based upon many issues, most of which have not been monitored or tested or studied and remain unknown because they only considered the dam issue, didn't address the larger urban watershed issues and these economic and social concerns. As most of my friends know, I love to talk about the Milwaukee River and the parks which border it, and I will go on to the point, but I'm going to move on to my point. So I'm going to make my selection based on what was created, a sustainable and resilient plan. I would have to select repair the dam. My reasons? The river has never in its history been at this water level with the dam open. So we don't know what the river is going to do. We've never done a geophysical study of the area, so we have no idea. I know I've been very surprised as I do my river patrolling to go around and see all the new dams that are being created at many points along the river merely by trees and also by foliage that is grown in these areas. And by the way, some of those maps are very accurate in showing that this area is becoming more blocked, not just with the trees, but with the debris this catches. There's 700 square miles of debris heading to the Milwaukee Harbor down this river every year, and most of it is trees. Okay, my second concern is as we move forward, the way we're going to handle the surface water is in a process of changing. You know, we have a new paradigm that's being created. This new paradigm, we do it at parks, right, Kevin? I mean, we create bioswales and we create let the ground absorb the moisture, right? That's what we've done that at the zoo, and we've done that at Bradford Beach. And okay, so we're heading into a new paradigm of water handling. We're not going to use big pipes anymore. We're going to go to smaller pipes, and what we're going to do is we're going to let Mother Nature do what Mother Nature does best, absorb the stormwater. Allowing the water to move to creek beds, bioswales, holding ponds, Milwaukee County Parks knows that this is the way to go, and it's going to affect how MMSD goes about handling stormwater runoff in the future. And so the real problem with this whole area, not the little picture of the dam, but the whole area, is we built houses in the wrong places. We had 75 years of development here, and now all these houses are built on creek beds. They're built on retention ponds and bioswales that we should be used to save ourselves a ton of money in handling this water. And they got to get out of there. They shouldn't be there. We should acquire them and remove them. In Glendale, we're removing some up on the point because, hey, if a house floods every 5 years, it shouldn't be there. But the geology of the land points to a higher water level. The actual physical geology of this property, that water was originally over 8 feet high, and then we drained it, okay? And now we want somebody to wave their magic wand and fix 75 years of problems. That's not going to happen. So what we really need to do is the reason I've selected this option to repair the dam, and by the way, I do like Fisk Passage, but and I think we can get the money for that. But the reason I selected this process is I selected it because I think we've got the greatest surface water technology institute at UWM. We have one of the finest geo-urban planning centers probably in the nation. We have people who write books for the world who are consulted on Helsinki, who are consulted on when they did the work in Singapore. These people are here. He's a professor emeritus at Marquette. Never consulted. Never bothered to reach out to this new paradigm of water handling. So 25 years in geological time is very short. Okay? So basically what we need to do is put this group of planners together and study this in greater detail. And I select the option of keeping this dam simply because it gives us the option to bring the water down or up as we move forward with our planning. And I believe the 25 years gives us time to develop an adaptive management program. It gives us time to bring to test things, to monitor things, and to see how they're going to work. Do we have 350 students in geophysics who are dying to look for a project to do? And this would be a great project for them to actually map the geophysics of the land. And in 25 years, you can pull it out. You can put 100 rock ramps up there because the houses won't be in the way. And you will have a super greenway. You will have a wonderful park. You can have ponds. And you can deal with your economic situations by building high-rises there on the geologically stable land, which are water and ecology-efficient buildings for people. And I know everybody, I couldn't even convince the board of this, okay, my board. So, or maybe even get it to them, but maybe it helps you understand how really complex this issue is. And I think just listening to people here that you know it is a complex issue. And I'm not going to solve this issue for you, but our scientists, our people who live in the area, the EPA, the riverkeeper, we need to come together instead of trying to make these decisions on three options that none of them even considered a higher water level in the area. It's ridiculous. It's not going to be sustainable. It's not going to be resilient because it doesn't contend with the social, economic, and environmental issues. None of it. And it's because the narrow focus of the study. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter, for those comments. We have a question.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Borkowski.
As a city kid, Mr. River Warden, I'm curious as to what violations you have seen locally here. I'm curious as to what...
That's one of the most marvelous things about Lincoln Park and Esterbrook Park and the areas there. I think the most violent thing I ever saw in the park was some kids were out there hunting with BB guns. And the most ridiculous thing that we managed to get away with without calling the county police was we had a bunch of our kids camping out on the island and they stole all the flags off the golf course. Paintball stuff. Generally, we're on the lookout for poaching. That's a big one. People using multiple lines. You got to remember, I work for the warden at the WDNR. Not work for him, but volunteer through his office.
And what did they poach? I'm sorry.
The salmon. And then they take them to Chicago and they sell them.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks much. And finally, Dick Yar.
We're all going to get out of here. Jeez, what patience. And what a lot of passion and intelligence that comes out again on this issue.
And even from our audience.
Yeah. Are you the audience? Oh, man. I'm Dick Yar. I live on the river. I've been here before a number of times. Probably nothing that I have to say is needed at this point. I'll make a few remarks. I'm concerned about this EA going forward to the BLM with three choices. It seems to me that all of the thousands of hours of meetings and work and intention that we have put into it and the DNR and the Riverkeeper, all of these efforts of our consciousness can be negated by the BLM. These people, we don't know them. The BLM, the Bureau of Land Management.
I have a friend who serves in it. He says, "Bored, lonely men."
Okay.
Because they're usually in very remote areas.
So I'm looking at this with trepidation. In some respects, I would have liked, no matter what pressures were brought on the park's director and employees, to say we have direction to ask only for the BLM's input on an EA regarding our intention to repair this dam. These other things got added in there, and I'm uncomfortable. We've put a lot of work into this. So what I have done is I've gone ahead and made contact above the BLM with Sally Jewell, who is the Secretary of the Department of Interior. And there are a couple of questions that I think from an investigative point of view, we may have to explore in deeper depth. The first one is that it appears that the two orders on the dam by the Wisconsin DNR alleged facts which are not facts. I have written a letter to Kathy Stepp and Bill Sturdivant in Madison requesting that they specifically show their calculations as to why that dam might be an imminent possibility of failure and that it was going to wipe out the city of Milwaukee. It appears to me that the order borrowed the language language, the statutory language of public health and safety, and really had no basis for doing so. So I've been in contact with Kathy Stepp and with Bill Sturdivant and the writer of the first order. It appears that they are unable to support the orders. They know that I'm putting them on notice. Here we've had these thousands of hours of meetings, you know. Jerry and I are getting to know each other pretty well from the very beginning here. But the county board, after looking at this issue in great depth and with public meetings, you know, voted 16-3, 17-0, 17-0 in favor of repairing the dam, against a lot of resistance from the DNR and the river keepers. So it's all come down to this now. The BLM. We're looking at the BLM having the total power of this decision. The BLM, it is an aggressive interjection of the BLM which has occurred here, which the BLM for over 70 years had no objections to our repairing the dam. The many times, you know, over 70 years, all of a sudden now, this interests me that now they are so very interested in making sure that nothing occurs on their island. It seems to me also that there is a body of survey law that states in Wisconsin and various national standards that after 20 years of use, that a permanent easement is by law established. Now the BLM is claiming steadfastly that that's not going to fly with their federally owned lands, which we have questioned on a lot of levels.
You know, Dick, I think, we have no, I've had no contact with the BLM. I know nothing about their involvement in this, and perhaps your concerns would be best addressed directly to them, because we have no abiding control over any of that.
Well, that's for sure. Yeah, I know. Yeah. So here's what I want to close with. If we would decide, say, to forward this EA application as has been presented today, we relinquish all control to this unknown organization. We cannot predict, but all control after all of this work. And so there is a possible champion for the use by Milwaukee citizens of this natural resource for recreation, the public use of this river, and that is Sally Jewell, the Secretary of the U.S. Department of the Interior. And perhaps we might at some point request the group of county supervisors direct Corporation Counsel to write a letter to her asking for a review of these circumstances, the 70 years, the permanent easement, possibility of adverse possession, the right of way. But she has been regarded in the press as a defender of recreational use of natural resources. And in Milwaukee, the urban use of this river, I think, is really precious for us to preserve. That's all.
Thank you to all who participated today. Glenn, you have a question?
I just wanted to state this. We've got letters from both senators offering help in this matter, and they said we'd be glad to help, but Milwaukee County has to ask for help. We can't go and ask We can't go and help you with the Department of Interior or BLM.
Well, if we live in a society where your federal representatives can't talk to their federal agencies, I'm unclear as to how we would otherwise approach that, Glenn. But I wanted to thank everyone today for their participation. We've had a lengthy meeting this afternoon and appreciate all the comments made. There being no further business before the committee, we stand adjourned.